You are listening to The Morning Magazine for Monday, August 30th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the Casa de Paz Center, which provides shelter to people leaving the immigration detention facility in Aurora, moved to a new home this weekend. We'll speak with the project coordinator. And the CityCast Denver crew shares the story of an unofficial, decades-old park in a historic but rapidly gentrifying neighborhood. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the latest Jim Hightower commentary just after the BBC headlines. And then it's a public affair. Today, Rosana Longo-Better speaks with members of the Boko Suma initiative. And as always on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. But first, these headlines with KGNU's Alexis Kenyon.
Two Boulder sheriff's deputies were convicted of manslaughter by a jury this past Friday. Deputies James O'Brien and Adam Lunn were found guilty of manslaughter in the 2018 death of Demetrius Shankling. The Longmont Times Call reports the 6-foot-tall 23-year-old Shankling died after deputies stuffed him into a 5-foot compartment of a detox van on his stomach and then squeezed the door shut. Shankling died after 27 days in a coma. Toxicology reports indicated that alcohol and amphetamines contributed to his suffocation, but ultimately, the officers were deemed to have used improper protocol in which the court found them guilty of manslaughter. Colorado ranks second in wealth inequality across the United States, according to a wealth distribution study by the Economic Innovation Group, or EIG. The study looked at asset income, which, unlike wages or government payments, counts dividends, interest, rents, and royalties. According to the report, the overall economy is booming and asset prices are soaring, but many American communities are left out with little direct stake in the wealth created on financial markets. Especially in the Mountain West, the report says, there are a number of extremely affluent enclaves full of second homes for the wealthy. Over the past two economic cycles, asset prices have ballooned. This has driven the wealth divide, especially in the most favored second home destinations of the most affluent classes. 100,000 Coloradans will stop receiving unemployment checks this week when the pandemic's unemployment benefits end. Currently, there are more job openings than unemployed citizens. Many of those available jobs are in the low-paying service sector, which often require high contact with the general public. Fluctuating wages and uncertainty with the new Delta variant continue to create an uneasy atmosphere for job seekers. Boulder Valley School District updated its dress code last week. They altered the previous dress code to allow students freedom of self-expression within the confines of not allowing nudity or content that evokes violence or messages of hate. What the policy doesn't include is subjective language about a student's dress being distracting or disruptive, which the Daily Camera reported the committee said can, quote, create disparities, reinforce stereotypes, and increase marginalization. The previous dress code, which passed in 2001, prohibited clothing that causes or is likely to cause disruption of the educational process in the classroom environment or the maintenance of a safe and orderly school. About 100 people gathered in downtown Boulder and Longmont Saturday to protest state-level voter suppression laws and to call on Congress to take action at the federal level to protect voting rights. Similar protests occurred across the country on what was the 58th anniversary of Martin Luther King's famous March on Washington. The protesters are calling for the passage of the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which would create a nationwide standard for ballot access and enforcement methods to prevent the institution of measures historically used to discriminate against voters. Colorado has an electoral system often regarded as a gold standard, with automatic voter registration upon receipt of a driver's license, the option of mail-in ballots for all registered voters, and same-day voter registration. A Denver district court judge has dismissed an appeal from Colorado billionaires Phil and Nancy Anschutz. The appeal asked the Department of Revenue for an $8 million tax refund. Earlier this month, Phil and Nancy Anschutz argued that federal changes from the CARES Act and the Pandemic Relief Bill from 2020 have changed tax law, which entitles them to an adjustment to their 2018 tax refund. Judge Eric Eliff determined that Anschutz's case needs more evidence to grant the request. He was quoted saying, "Plaintiffs are asking for a check, and that money has to come from somewhere." Although the $8 million refund is just a fraction of the Anschutz estimated wealth, Eliff concluded that the total cost to the state for issuing refund checks for prior tax years could cause fiscal trouble. Phil Anschutz owns the Broadmoor Hotel and Resort in Colorado Springs, as well as several media outlets, including The Gazette, based in Colorado Springs, and Colorado Politics. Moderate to heavy concentrations of smoke from the Black Mountain wildfire will affect portions of Grand County on Sunday and Monday. The heaviest impacts are expected during the overnight and early morning hours in areas immediately below the fire, including locations along the Troublesome Creek, Upper Colorado River drainages, and along Highway 40 between Kremling and Partial. There is an air quality alert for Kremling, Partial, Hot Sulphur Springs, Granby, and Grand Lake. In Boulder and in Denver, it will be sunny with areas of smoke and a high around 92 degrees. Tuesday will be similar with areas of smoke and highs in the 90s. We may get some moisture on Wednesday, but it will stay hot with highs in the 90s. Outside our Boulder studios, it's 56 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. When people are released from immigration detention, they often exit the facility with only the clothes on their backs. But if they're released from the for-profit immigration detention facility in Aurora, they may encounter someone from Casa de Paz. For more on Casa de Paz, its work, and its recent expansion, I'm joined live by Executive Director Sarah Jackson. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
First, can you start by explaining to listeners what kind of work Casa de Paz does?
Yeah, we have the honor of welcoming immigrants that have been released from the ICE Detention Center in Aurora, Colorado. That basically looks like being there right as they walk out of the gates of that immigrant prison, offering a snack, some water, maybe a telephone so they can call their family and friends to start coordinating a plane ticket or a bus ticket to get to their final destination. We provide transportation to the airport. And most of all, beyond the physical things that we are providing, we are there as a welcoming team to remind folks that have just been released from this detention center that we're glad they're in the United States, that they are welcome here, and that they belong here.
How many people come through on any given week?
Well, I was actually running the numbers a few days ago, and last July, we hosted 11 guests. These are folks that are asylum seekers that have just recently crossed the border and then were transferred to Colorado. They could be transferred to any detention center across the country. The one here in Colorado is just kind of luck of the draw where you get sent. Last July in 2020, we hosted 11 guests who had been released from detention. This July, we hosted over 200 guests. So we've been seeing more folks released from the detention center lately, which has made the need for the services that we provide even more critical. And I'm just really proud of our community of volunteers that have made sure that each and every person released from the detention center is welcomed by our team.
And what's the cause for the recent increase you just noted?
You know, I think there hasn't been much progress along the border with letting asylum seekers seek asylum, which is their human right. And under the previous administration, we saw the border clamped down due to COVID and a variety of other reasons. And this current administration has actually not pulled back some of those policies yet, and they're still in place. And so when people are in desperate situations and they're being told to wait in dangerous places like the border and not being allowed to come into the United States, you know, at some point that they've got to weigh the risk of, okay, do we try and cross and eventually find a Border Patrol agent that's not at a station, which is what we've been seeing a lot of crossings lately, is people being denied seeking asylum at the port of entry. So they cross into deadlier parts of the desert, and then they will find a Border Patrol agent to voluntarily turn themselves in for asylum. But I think that we see the same sort of people are faced with the same decision. We can just look at Afghanistan right now, right? Like, do you risk crossing? Do you risk trying to get on that plane? Because you know, if you stay where you're staying, it's spelling out death for you. Or do you take that risk? And that's what we're seeing, is more people just taking that risk, which then leads to higher numbers of people dying in the desert because there's no method for them to cross that's safe for them.
And Casa de Paz got a new home this weekend. Tell us about that, the need for it, and what further items you may be requiring.
Yeah, we, for the past 9 years that we've been open, we've been renting a home, which is about 15 to 20 minutes away from the detention center. And we've been saving up money so that when we had cash, we could actually buy a home that was in a very convenient spot. And that's what we did. We saved up money for the past 9 years. And this weekend, we purchased our forever home, if you will. It's within walking distance of the detention center, which makes it really easy for people who have been released to just walk over, or for a volunteer to walk over from the house and pick them up and bring them over. And so if you go to our website, which is casadepazcolorado.org, you can go to our wish list and see all the things that we need to make our house feel like a home.
And at one point this year, that detention facility, the ICE detention facility in, well, GEO detention facility in Aurora, was one of the largest, the site of one of the largest COVID outbreaks in the country. Has the protocol for pandemic mitigation within the facility improved at all?
There are fewer people in the detention center, both detained immigrants and staff, who are infected with COVID currently. And so we continue to make sure that access to the vaccine is available for people who want the vaccine, and holding the right people accountable if that is not happening.
Sarah Jackson, Executive Director of Casa de Paz, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
At the southwest corner of 14th and Lipan in Denver's La Alma Lincoln Park neighborhood sits an inconspicuous plot of land known as the Jerry Martinez Family Memorial Park. It's not officially part of Denver's park system, but is in practice a neighborhood park. For the past 30-plus years, longtime Westside resident Flo Archuleta has acted as a steward of the land. She's watched her neighborhood change all around this park, going from a place in the city where gangs dominated the streets to a place where real estate agents and developers are now making millions off tiny historic homes. And now, it looks like the park may be sold off too. CityCast Denver's Bree Davies has more.
It's lovely.
We have a lot of people who come here.
It's great.
People who work and
come over and have their lunch.
It's perfect for that.
My producer, Paul Caroli, and I arranged to meet up with Flo Archuleta in her park this past weekend. She showed up with her daughter, Natasha, her granddaughter, Shemaya, and her great-grandson, Azarias Lazarus.
So the reason I wanted to talk to you was we did a story a couple of weeks ago about the Historic and Cultural District in La Alma Lincoln Park. And my friend Anthony Garcia, our mutual friend, reached out to me and said, hey, you know, that's an interesting concept and everything, but I have this friend Flo and she lives in this neighborhood and she's going through this situation with a park. And it just seems contradictory to me that they're doing this project to preserve the neighborhood, but my friend Flo might be losing this park that she's been taking care of for 30 years.
31 years.
And so how did this park come to be?
Okay. It was full of weeds and debris, broken couches, chairs, and gang and Philly was controlling this little area here. It was all fenced up, and they used to come here at night and cause problems for the people in the community. And this went on for years, and one time there was a phone, payphone right here at the corner, and I was on the payphone there with my children. I came to the phone to call my son, and when I was on the phone with him, I could hear hollering and carrying on in the background. And one of the young men jumped over the fence and went up to me and hit me with the radio. It was one of those big radios they used to use at the time. Yeah. And he said, you're not allowed to come over here when we're having that's a hard word for me to say. But anyway, they were doing that. And they were
doing a gang initiation in the park, in this plot of land that we're in right now.
That was Housing Authority's property. And it hadn't been maintained in many years. It was just the same way. It was full of weeds, debris, broken bottles. People were getting stabbed, shot at. And, I mean, it was a mess right here. So when he hit me with the radio, my son said, Mom, what's going on? And I said, this guy just hit me over there with the radio and told me to get off the block. And he said, I'll be over there shortly. And he brought some of his friends that used the projects were there. And he said, we're going to go over there and have a talk with these guys right now because I'm tired. And so is all the neighborhood of what they're doing, going around beating people up, and nobody's doing anything about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the police were called on them on several occasions, but nothing was ever done. It just a continuous thing. And so they got together and they went and had a talk with him and roughed him up a little bit and told him, you just have to get out of this neighborhood. You just out of here. Well, housing evicted all of them. They were out. And the director at the time came over and talked to me. And he said that he didn't want to call the police. He didn't want no problem. But he understood where myself and the neighborhood people stood behind this whole incident. And we were really tired. There's a lot of people who got robbed and beat up in this area. Nobody's doing nothing. Yeah. It was just a mess.
Yeah.
So after this whole thing happened, it cleared up. They were gone. They didn't come back and bother. And I thought, well, you know what? Since we're talking about this little area and make sure they don't come back, how about if I go ahead and put a community garden in there or something? And he said, sure, it would be great. He said, but we are not furnishing you with the water, the seed, anything, you know, what you need for the for the garden, you're going to have to supply yourself. And I said, oh, this is no problem. I will do that. So I reached out to Denver Urban Gardens, and I told them that they had given me permission to tear out of all these weeds and all this stuff, and if I could, there's any chance they could help me out with seeds and plants. And yeah, they'll give me some. Well, the first year in 1990, we really didn't have much of a garden because it was such a mess. It took us months and months.
Just to clean up the trash.
Yeah.
And it was so bad.
Yeah. And so the trash cans were filled to the top. Some of the neighbors were complaining, so they had to bring an extra one just for all the junk we're dragging out of here and weeds and everything else.
It was just kind of a junkyard.
Like, there
you
go.
People were just using it to
You couldn't
throw
give one of these homes away in this neighborhood.
Right.
They would pay you to, you could pay somebody to move here and they might because it was so terrible neighborhood. It was terrible right here.
And how long have you been in this neighborhood?
Oh, all my life.
Your whole life?
Yeah, I won't move out. I love the west side. So what I did is I got my water from the neighbor next door here. Jerry Valenzuela used to own this house. And, you know, we worked together, had hoses. He goes, well, anyway, could you take care of my front yard while you're at it? I go, well, yeah, at least I could do that. I'm doing everything else here. So I would do that. And we had a beautiful garden. That was 90, 91, 92, 93. My son was killed in 93.
What happened to your son?
Somebody took him from here in the community when he went to go cash his check at the liquor store right over here, across from King Supers. And they took him to 27th and Stout Street, and they shot him with two different guns.
I'm so sorry. How old was he?
24. And what happened is when he was murdered, we buried him in March of 1993. And it was time, the season and another month was for the garden again. And so what happened was I wasn't too much into gardening that year. So I was just kind of going to clean it up and leave it for another year until 94 and come in here and restart the garden again. Denver Urban Garden said, you know, came out and said, well, are you going to put the garden this year or not? Because they used to give me the seeds and the plants. And I said, no, I think I'm going to pass this year and let everything settle over here, get it cleaned up again and get ready for 94. And they said, would you like to just make it into you ever think of having a memorial park for your son? And I said, I would love that, but I mean, what do I have to do that? Signatures of the community, a petition.
From Sal Carpio at DHA.
Yeah, Sal Carpio.
So he said, you just need to get signatures from the community and we can turn this into a park for your son. 100 signatures.
He got close to 300.
And you got close to 300.
Yes.
So clearly you know some people.
Yeah. And so by 94, we were already establishing a park and designing, trying to come up with designs. And that's when Denver Urban Garden came in and said, Flo, we could help you with the materials. There's some things we can do and some things we can't do. And you can get community people to help you. So they did. They came in with materials. They done the rocks all the way around here. They done the benches and... They done a lot of the heavy stuff that we couldn't do.
Sure.
Yeah. And so it was established. It became a community park.
Ever since 1994, Flo has been taking care of her park. She picks up trash. She picks up dog poop. She makes sure the plants get watered. And it's all because of that agreement she made with Sal Carpio, who was the longtime head of the Denver Housing Authority, or DHA, which technically owns the land. But here we are almost 30 years later, and Sal Carpio has died without leaving any physical legal documentation of his arrangement with Flo. So they come in, so DHA has approached you in the last couple of months or years? Or?
Yeah, just in the last couple of years, they came in and put up the sign and put in that box over the water. And I go, why are you doing that? And they said, well, because this is Denver Housing Authority property. And I go... It is not. You abandoned me when you started knocking down those projects. They were right here on 14th and Le Pan.
Yeah.
And they left from here. They moved out. Well, we had a meeting with them not too long ago, and they said they wanted to, they were thinking of selling the property to real estate. And that,
they wanted to build affordable housing.
Here. Mm-hmm. And I said, that doesn't sound, you know, you're not doing that to my son's park. This is my park. Are not taking it from me. No, it's not going to happen. Because it's not their property anymore. They done lost it.
Yeah, you've taken care of it for decades.
31 years.
That's a long time. But you never had, unfortunately, there wasn't any like legal paperwork with Sal at that point.
Yeah.
And then kind of Sal moves on. And
we should have probably had that. Yeah,
but, you know, how would you know? So now, do you know where you are in the process with them? Have you heard from them lately?
No, we're having a meeting soon.
Okay.
We're supposed to get together and have a meeting.
Have you talked to your council person, to Torres?
She was supposed to be at the meeting.
She didn't show up. Okay.
She showed up. I feel like they want to cheat me out of my park.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's right. And I told him, you know, if you don't want to give it to me like I've earned it already, then at least have the decency to sell it to me for $1,000.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fair, you know?
Yeah.
For all... The people who live here and the property and upgrading it and all the work I've done.
Further by saying you can sell it to us for the what the value was in 1990.
When she took it over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We will accept that.
Which, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was very different than it is at this moment.
It's really hard for them to understand the work that went into this park and the years. I could have retired from a job at 31 years. This is my job.
Yeah.
You know, I've had it from the day my son passed on. He used to be part of the garden, and he used to help me.
He used to help with the garden?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And makes you wonder, because this case was never solved.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? I'm sorry.
You wonder who killed him. Yeah. I do wonder all the time if it was maybe the gang that was here.
A retaliation of some kind or something for something that happened in the neighborhood. Yeah. So. You've seen a lot in this neighborhood, obviously.
But it's not like that any longer. No. And people feel secure here now.
Yeah. But you've seen it through it all, you know.
Yeah, I've experienced it.
Yeah.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for tuning in to the Morning Magazine today on KGNU. I've been your host, Shannon Young.